Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 1, Verses 1 to 24, the whole chapter, Curse upon the Yadu Dynasty. Verse 1. Shishuku avacha kitva daitya vatam krishna sarama yatu birvita bhuvavitarya param charistam janayan kalim. Translation. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Lord Shri Krishna, accompanied by Balaram and surrounded by the Yadu dynasty, executed the killing of many demons. Then, further to remove the burden of the earth, the Lord arranged for the great battle of Kurukshetra, which suddenly erupted in violence between the Kurus and the Pandavas. So last 3 years we've been associating with Lord Shri Krishna. We heard of his Braj Leela, we heard of his Mathura Leela, and we heard of his Dwarka Leela. And the beginning of the chapter, beginning of the 10th canto actually, we heard how the demigods came to pray to Lord Krishna to incarnate. Here in the purport, it explains that the 11th canto of Bhagavatam begins with a reference to the pastimes executed by Lord Krishna in the 10th canto. Beginning of 10th canto describes when the earth was overburdened by demoniac rulers. Personified earth, Bhumi, approached Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes, begging for relief. And Brahma immediately went with the demigods to approach the Supreme Lord in his form of Kshirakshai Vishnu. As the demigods waited respectfully on the shore of the Milk Ocean, the Supreme Lord announced through Brahma he would soon incarnate on earth and the demigods should also descend to assist in his pastimes. Thus, from the very beginning of Lord Krishna's appearance, it was understood he would descend to the earth to remove the demons. So now, it is not a very happy time for devotees because Krishna is about to leave. But before he leaves, he's going to give us wonderful instructions, the whole Uddhava Gita. So it will take you not just one lifetime, it'll take you many lifetimes to understand Uddhava Gita. Very, very wonderful instructions. So there is a similarity here, the beginning of the 11th canto, and also the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Beginning of Bhagavad Gita, it is before the Battle of Kurukshetra. And now here we're talking about after the Battle of Kurukshetra. The Battle of Kurukshetra is again mentioned. So we will see there are some indirect references here. The prelude to Bhagavad Gita was there before the battle, and now the prelude to the Moksha Leela and prelude to the Uddhava Gita is also being given to us by Shukadeva Goswami. Now, we will also hear about how Lord Krishna is going to destroy his own family. So many people are bewildered about this fact that how could Krishna allow his own family to be destroyed? So do you have this flip chart, any more copies of the first? Okay, it's over there, all right. Maybe you can see how many copies, just the first one, right? The first top one? First chapter one, you can pass out as many as will go around. That one. And we can make some more copies later. I guess you could share, those of you who are here. Raise your hand if you don't have a copy of this. Okay, share. The ladies can share, the men can share with this. So we're going to hear in the first 10 verses reasons why Krishna allowed his dynasty to be destroyed. Well, you have to share. Whoever doesn't have left now will share with people. Yeah. And we can get some more copies for you tomorrow, if you want. That's a schedule. These are schedules. Okay. Schedules, raise your hand, and then we'll start again. Yeah. So we're going to go to the paragraph 4 of the purport. comment by Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he's addressing this question, why Krishna has destroyed his own family. He has revealed, although many demigods had taken birth in the Yadu dynasty to assist the Lord, some members of the Yadu dynasty were actually inimical toward Krishna. Because of their mundane vision of the Lord, they considered themselves to be on the same level as Krishna. So sometimes that happens with devotees, that we think, oh yes, we are devotees, we're the best. And then you sometimes criticize others, or you think that you can go beyond the laws of material nature or the laws of the government even. I remember 10 years ago or 15, a long time ago, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I went to, it was Russia, Moscow, and there was one driver, I've told this story before, his name was Yamaraj, the name of my driver, and he thought he didn't have to follow the rules of the road, and he was driving on the sidewalks to get around the traffic. And I said, it's all right, we're not in a hurry, you know, but he was thinking, you know, it doesn't matter. So sometimes we become a little proud because of our position. The devotees are certainly relieved from the majority of the miseries of material existence. They don't suffer as much as tragically as the people who are not devotees. But sometimes we can get proud and we think, yes, we are the best. So this happened with some of the members of the Yadu dynasty. They thought, yes, we are like Krishna, people should worship us too. So this reason is on the flip chart somewhere. It will come later on in verse 3 purport, inimical, and also verse 5 purport. We'll talk about it a little bit more. So here in this purport, it says, there's a popular saying, familiarity breeds contempt. To destroy the contemptuous members of his own dynasty, the Lord caused a quarrel among them. For this purpose, he arranged for Narada and other sages to display anger against the Karshnas, the members of his family. But then, it is explained, Lord Krishna actually returned them to their original position as universal directors or demigods. It is the Lord's promise in Bhagavad Gita, he will always protect those who are favorable to his service. So now, the last paragraph of this purport gives a complete summary of the entire 11th canto, and we have this also on your chart. Chapter 1 is a prelude to the Moksha Lila. Moksha Lila means the destruction of Krishna's own family. Chapters 2 to 5, conversations between the 9 Yogendras and King Nimi. And we'll have, I believe, 9 different questions and the answers in chapters 2 through 5. Chapter 6, prayers of Brahma, Shiva, and other demigods. And Burijan said yesterday that the first 6 chapters are the first part. There's like 3 parts to the 11th canto. So the first part is like Bhagavad Dharma, an introduction to the Uddhava Gita. Then chapters 7 to 29, Uddhava Gita. Chapters 30 to 31 is the withdrawal of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Lord Krishna. So Vishwanath also comments that in the 10th canto, the 10th subject, Ashraya, was described. Now 11th canto will be liberation, which takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. And so there's a few more pastimes left here, and that is basically Krishna's Moksha Lila and his Uddhava Gita. So verse 2, because the sons of Pandu were enraged by the numerous offenses of their enemies, such as duplicitous gambling, verbal insults, the seizing of Draupadi's hair, and many other cruel transgressions, Supreme Lord engaged those Pandavas as the immediate cause to execute his will. On the pretext of the battle of Kurukshetra, Lord Krishna arranged for all the kings who were burdening the earth to assemble with their armies on opposite sides of the battlefield. When the Lord killed them through the agency of war, the earth was relieved of its burden. So here we have a summary of the Mahabharata in one verse. So no need to read the Mahabharata. Of course, if you want to know more things, you can read the Mahabharata. But here, Bhagavatam is the essence of everything. So here we have the essence of the Mahabharata. The gambling match, the insults, seizing of Draupadi's hair, other cruel transgressions, The Pandavas were the instruments. So what is the... Of course, we hear in Bhagavad Gita how Krishna says to Arjuna that you will be the instrument, nimitta matram bhavasavi sachin, to execute my will. And I am coming here. We will hear later on in this chapter in what incarnation Krishna was present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and what incarnation he is going to be living now in the house in Dwaraka. Which incarnation is that?
Time.
Kalatmana, Kala. So we will hear this later on in verse 12, that he is time personified. So before he was in his Madhurja Leela in Braj, and now at the end of his pastimes, his form will be that of time. And that is why, one reason why his dynasty will be destroyed, because the time has come. There is spring, there is summer, there is rainy season, there is fall and there is winter. So as the seasons go, so Krishna's pastimes also go. And now the winter has been finished. Everybody has been killed except for his own dynasty. So let's read the purport in the second paragraph. In this verse, the word itaretara is significant. Previous to the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna had personally killed many demons, including Putana, Keshya, Gasha, and Kamsa. Now, Krishna wanted to complete his mission of removing the earth's burden by killing the remaining impious persons. But as stated here, Kritva Nimitam, the Lord did not personally kill, but empowered his devotees Arjuna and other Pandavas to remove the impious kings. Thus, acting personally and through his immediate expansion, Balaram, as well as by empowering his pure devotees like Pandavas, Krishna fully displayed the pastimes of Yuga Avatar by reestablishing religious principles and ridding the world of demons. So what verse of Bhagavad Gita is this? Right here? Pritanaya Sauranam Vinashaya Chidishkitam. Yes, also Yada Yada Hidharmasya Glanir Bharata Bharata. So first canto is described in first canto 1939 by the words Hata Gata Swarupam. Many great devotees played with the Lord as enemies. Like who? Like Bhishmadev. And upon being killed by Krishna, returned immediately to his abode in the spiritual sky, in their original spiritual bodies. Because God is absolute, by his killing he simultaneously removes the demons from the earth and encourages his pure devotees. So in the first canto, 8th chapter, it's described that their duration of life was decreased because of the rough handling of the hair of Draupadi. And Arjuna was remembering after Krishna left that it was only Krishna who loosened the hair of all the other wives of Duryodhana and the other side who dared open Draupadi's hair. So this was the eye for an eye. And Prabhupada explains the Lord can tolerate insults upon himself by any miscreant because the father tolerates insults from the son, but he never tolerates insults of his devotees. So when Draupadi was born, it was predicted that she will be the cause of the death of many great warriors. Well, of course, the question may arise in the devotee's mind. Sometimes we also suffer, and it seems like Krishna doesn't come right away. So the question may arise. Prabhupada brings up the question in the third canto. Well, why didn't Krishna just kill them immediately when they insulted Draupadi? It's enough. He should have just come and killed all of them. Why did he tolerate such injustice and insult? So Prabhupada explains that he wanted to gather all of them together at one time on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and make a shortcut in his killing mission. And otherwise he'd have to go all over the world and kill everybody. But, that, you know, everybody together on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and very fast and easy. Like one atom bomb will take care of so many. You don't have to fight a whole war. You just send one atom bomb and the war is over. And so they just had the battle of Kurukshetra for 18 days and that was it. So now verse 3. We come to the present time, what's happening now with Krishna in this 11th canto. We heard the review of the 10th canto, the killing the demons, and now 11. And the theme is is to kill the demons and also annihilation. So we're going to hear about that in this chapter. Supreme Personality of Godhead used the Yadu dynasty, verse 3, which was protected by his own arms to eliminate the kings who with their armies had been the burden of this earth. Then the unfathomable Lord thought to himself. Now we can hear Krishna thinking. Although some may say the earth's burden is now gone, in my opinion, it is not yet gone, because there still remains the Yadava dynasty itself, whose strength is unbearable for the earth. So our commentators quote Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Thakur in the paragraph 1 of the purport. He said in this regard, although ordinary people might think the Lord had now removed the burden of the earth by killing the demons, reestablishing Dharma, and so on, Lord Krishna himself could detect there was further danger from the irreligious activities of his own family members who were acting improperly. So we'll skip down a bit, a few sentences. Lord Krishna detected by their intimate association with him some members of the other dynasty had become indifferent to his will. Since such whimsical members of the other dynasty could act freely, being relatives of the Lord, they would surely cause great misfortune for the world, and foolish persons would take such whimsical behavior to be the will of Krishna. So sometimes a devotee will do something and they say, oh yeah, this is Krishna's will. He may do some activity which is not so proper. They say, yeah, well, he's a devotee, so this is Krishna's will. But actually, no. Even if you're a member of Krishna's family, and you can't do whatever you like, you cannot just simply whimsically act. So we'll go down to the purport of paragraph 4. Jiva Goswami has given another reason for the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. He emphasizes the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead should never be taken to be ordinary material activities, nor are the Lord's associates ordinary persons. So here's the opposite side. No, they're not ordinary. Although Lord Krishna apparently incarnates within this world for some time, then goes away, it should be understood the Lord is eternally situated with his entourage in his various abodes in the spiritual sky like Goloka, Mathura, and Dwarka. So here's the important part. Members of the Yadu dynasty are eternal associates of the Lord. Therefore, they cannot bear to be separated from the Lord. Since Krishna was preparing to give up his earthly pastimes, if he were to leave the Yadu dynasty on the earth, they would surely become so disturbed by his absence in their highly agitated state of mind, they would trample and destroy the earth. So just imagine, Krishna leaves and the Yadus are agitated in separation from Krishna, and they destroy the earth. That wouldn't be very nice. And to his pastimes. So here is another reason why he had to take them, because they're all so powerful. Samba, they could all kill 10,000, fight with 10,000 Maharathis or whatever. Very powerful warriors. So just imagine, now there's no warriors left on the earth. Everybody's killed. So what are these people going to do with themselves after Krishna leaves? Now the mission is finished. They don't need to fight anymore. So Jiva Goswami, next paragraph, paragraph 5, concludes, ultimately, the members of the Yadu dynasty are never to be considered irreligious. So, how to understand? First they say, you know, okay, they're getting indifferent to his will, they're this and that, but then now Jiva is saying, Jiva Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami is saying, no, they're eternal associates, you can't criticize them. But still, their behavior may be something else after Krishna leaves. So, therefore, let's read the purport a little bit more. Vaishnava Acharyas have mentioned the story of disappearance of the Yadu dynasties, specially meant to help the conditioned souls, that's us, achieve liberation from the bondage of materialistic life. Now, how is that going to help us get liberation? Within the three worlds, there are none as powerful and opulent as the Yadu dynasty. And then it goes on how the Lord has everything. So when we see how a fratricidal war suddenly deprived the members of the Yadu dynasty of all their earthly possessions and even their lives, we can understand there is no permanent position within this material world. Okay, so that's another reason why Krishna removed his dynasty. This is the reason for us. So we can understand, no matter how big devotee we are, no matter how much money we have, no matter how much fame we have, it will not be permanent in this world. So then the purport goes on, the entire situation was arranged by Lord Krishna to teach a lesson to the conditioned souls. So the devotees are used as an example to teach everyone. As Prabhupada in a previous purport in first canto, in Bhishma's teachings, he said that the mother teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. So Krishna is the mother, and who is the daughter? The devotees are the daughter. And yes, the yadus, the devotees, and the daughter-in-law is the other conditioned souls. So through the devotees, Krishna glorifies the devotees, and he teaches how one should behave in this world. So then the last paragraph, the last paragraph. In the first canto, Srila Prabhupada has commented as follows on the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. Setting of the sun does not mean the end of the sun. It means the sun is out of our sight. Similarly, the end of the mission of the Lord on a particular planet or universe only means he is out of our sight. End of the Yadu dynasty also does not mean that it is annihilated. It disappears along with the Lord out of our sight. So Prabhupada, this is a quote from 115.33, and the next verse, 34, explains that when Krishna removed the Yadu dynasty, it was like he had a thorn in his foot or his side, and he took it out with another thorn. So how could he take out? So now the Yadus were, of course, before they were not like thorns, but they were going to become like thorns. He was apprehending. They could become like thorns in the earth. So therefore, the only way to take out a thorn is with another thorn. So the only way to get free, get rid of his family, was by themselves killing each other. So a thorn taking out a thorn. But then later on, in the purport, in this purport of 115.34, Prabhupada talks about how they all got drunk and the madness of intoxication. And he said that these were all the demigod members of the Yadu dynasty. And he said the demigods are used to drinking the soma ras. The demigods also get drunk. So it's not surprising that all these Yadus got drunk at Prabhas and killed themselves. Because they did get drunk as demigods. And he just wanted to send them back to their service in the heavenly planets. And so this is another reason. So verse 4. Lord Krishna thought, oh, wait a minute, before I tell you that, I want to tell you one really interesting sentence that Prabhupada said in that purport about the thorns. Although every living being is a part and parcel of the Lord, still one who is a pinprick to the Lord is called an asura, and one who is a voluntary servitor of the Lord is called a devata, or demigod. So if you want to be a thorn in the side of Krishna, then that means you're a demon. And if you want to be a devotee, then you're the one that takes out the thorn in the side of the Lord. So there's the thorns, and then there's the ones who take off the thorns. So verse 4, Lord Krishna thought, no outside force could ever bring about the defeat of this family, the Yadu dynasty, whose members have always been fully surrendered to me and are unrestricted in their opulence. But if I inspire a quarrel within the dynasty, that quarrel will act just like a fire created from the friction of bamboo in a grove. And then I shall achieve my real purpose and return to my eternal abode. So we'll go to the end of paragraph 1 of the purport. Now his pastimes were coming to an end on this planet, would be transferred to another planet and another universe. Krishna wanted to remove all of his associates from the earth so that in his absence they would not constitute a burden. And nobody could defeat them, so he arranged the quarrel. Then the next paragraph, Shibhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has pointed out, ordinary people hearing of the adventures of the Yadu family might think the heroes of the Yadu dynasty are as worshipable as Krishna or their independent controllers. In other words, people polluted by Mayavad philosophy might see the Yadu dynasty as being on the same level as Krishna. Therefore, to establish even the most powerful living entity can never equal or surpass the Supreme Lord, Krishna arranged for the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. So, we go to verse 5. My dear King Parikshit, when the Supreme Almighty Lord, whose desire always comes to pass, had thus made up his mind, he withdrew his own family on the pretext of a curse spoken by an assembly of brahmanas. So now we go into the purport, end of the first paragraph. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has shown a parallel in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself as appearing as his own devotee. He appeared with Nityananda, Lord Advaita, and all three, Lord Chaitanya, Nityananda, and Advaita, are accepted by Vaishnava Acharyas to be in the category of Vishnu Tattva. These three perceived in the future their so-called seminal descendants would get undue recognition, thus being puffed up would commit grave offenses against those who are actually Vaishnava gurus or representatives of the Lord. So this, therefore, Lord Chaitanya had no children when he came, but Nityananda had children. So therefore, some people claim to be descendants of Nityananda. So the last two paragraphs of the purport, he quotes Nectar of Devotion about the class of men known as Nityananda Vamsha, who claim to be direct descendants of Lord Nityananda. And so in the Middle Ages, Prabhupada says in Nectar of Devotion, after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya's great associate, Lord Nityananda, a class of priestly persons claimed to be descendants of Nityananda, calling themselves the Goswami caste. So actually, I've heard recently that he did not have descendants, that these people who are claiming to be descendants were disciples, some of the families of disciples of Nityananda. They weren't actually descendants, even. But they're claiming that only we have the right to do devotional service and no one else, because we are descendants of Nityananda. They further claim the practice and spreading, and only we can be gurus, spreading of devotional service belong only to their particular class, which was known as Nityananda Vamsha. In this way, they exercised their artificial power for some time until Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, powerful acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, completely smashed their idea. There was a great hard struggle for some time, but it has turned out successful. It is now correctly and practically established. Devotional service is not restricted to a particular class of men. Besides that, anyone who is engaged in devotional service is already a high-class brahmana. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's struggle for this movement has come out successful. It is on the basis of his position that anyone from any part of the universe can become a Gaudiya Vaishnava. So just imagine if we had some people who said, yes, I'm in Krishna's family. I'm direct descendant of Lord Krishna. What havoc would be there? They would all claim to be incarnations and who knows what of Krishna. And then it would be very difficult to establish the Siddhanta of Krishna consciousness. So now the next verse is a very wonderful meditation by Shukadev, I believe, Shukadev Goswami, on Lord Krishna, his form, his qualities, his words, his glories. So while I read this verse, you can meditate on Lord Krishna. The deities this morning were very beautiful, if you can remember the deities in orange and red and beautiful, beautiful dresses, Krishna Balaram, Radhisham. Goni Tai? Sweaters. Yes. Okay, so you can meditate while we're hearing this description here. I'll sing the Sanskrit and then we'll sing the verse. Exercise and meditation. Swamartyalo kalavanya nimutyalo chanam ninam girvista smartam chittam padaistani shatam yaha. Achitya kirtin su shlokam vitatya hyanjisa nukau tamong naya tirishyanti tadak swam padam ishvara. Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is a reservoir of all beauty. All beautiful things emanate from him. And his personal form is so attractive, it steals the eyes away from all other objects, which then seem devoid of beauty in comparison to him. When Lord Krishna was on the earth, he attracted the eyes of all people. When Krishna spoke, his words attracted the minds of all who remembered them. By seeing the footsteps of Lord Krishna, people became attracted to him. Thus, they wanted to offer their bodily activities to the Lord as his followers. In this way, Krishna very easily spread his glories, which are sung throughout the world by the most sublime and essential Vedic verses. Lord Krishna considered that simply by hearing and chanting these glories, conditioned souls born in the future would cross beyond the darkness of ignorance. Being satisfied with this arrangement, he left for his desired destination. So, Krishna thought about us before he left. It said that that's why he came and he performed his pastimes. So if we hear about them, if we chant about them, we can cross beyond the darkness of ignorance. So isn't that wonderful to think that Krishna thought about us before he left the planet? He thought to leave something behind for us. And what did he leave? Srimad Bhagavatam, which is his incarnation. So we will go, this book has so many purports, so many huge purports. We are going to go to paragraph 7. So count. How many paragraphs is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's talking about how Krishna made everybody deaf and blind and took away all their senses. It is stated in this verse that by his beauty, Krishna stole away the vision of people who saw him. Nobody in this world can steal away our vision like that. Only Krishna. You see the deities, and nothing is as beautiful. Krishna's speaking was so attractive. Those who heard him became speechless. Since generally, those who cannot speak are also deaf, the Lord's words also stole away the ears of those who heard him. Well, since they were no longer interested in hearing sounds other than the Lord's speaking. Yeah, that happened to me. I used to read so many books before I was a devotee from the age of 7. Take so many books from the library. And my goal was to read the whole library. But after I got Bhagavad Gita, that was it. I lost my taste for hearing anything else except Gita, Bhagavatam. Yeah, a few years ago, Braja Bihari asked me, "Oh, do you read any magazines?" I said, "Yeah, I read Back to Godhead." And I think he was thinking of something else. But anyway, it's not attractive anymore. And it's all the same: birth, death, disease, and old age, and wars. If you want to read the newspaper, it just makes you depressed, or you hear the news. It's very depressing because it's the news of what's happening in this material world. It's a frying pan. Yeah, it's a frying pan. Everybody's being fried, and especially now they're really being fried in the pan. Someone told me that very people who have, they go to college for years and years, and they have jobs for years and years, and now they can't get a job. I know I met two devotees, where was it, in Ireland, two architects, and they can't get a job. They're living on welfare. Anyway, so Krishna stole away by displaying the beauty of his footsteps. Krishna stole away from those who saw them the power to perform materialistic activities. So it's good if you meditate on Krishna's lotus feet, the flag, the thunderbolt, the disc. You might then become much more attracted to devotional service. Thus, his appearance in this world, by his appearance, Krishna took away the senses of mankind. In other words, he made people blind, dumb, deaf, mad, and otherwise invalid. Huh. If a non-devotee were to read this, they will think, just see. Therefore, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur asks, since he took away everything people possessed, who would properly call him merciful? Rather, he is just a thief. So this is Vishnu Chakravarti's comment. In this way, he indirectly offers the highest praise to the beauty of the Lord. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also points out, although Krishna gave liberation to the demons by destroying them, to those who were attracted to him, Krishna gave pure love of God and drowned them in the ocean of his own beauty. So we have a choice. We can be a demon or we can be a devotee and drown in the ocean of Krishna's beauty. That's our choice. Krishna is not like a person who gives charity without discrimination. And Krishna is so merciful. Not only did he give the highest benediction to the inhabitants of the earth, he empowered great saintly persons like Vyasadeva to describe his pastimes with beautiful poetic verses. Thus people born on the earth in the future could easily cross over the ocean of birth and death by those glories, which are compared to a strong boat. In fact, those of us who are now enjoying the glories of Krishna through the transparent medium of the Bhaktivedanta Purports to Srimad Bhagavatam by the mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, are the fortunate recipients of the mercy of Krishna, who is merciful even to persons yet to be born. Yeah, there is a verse, I think we will read it this afternoon, at the second class today, about the demigods. Yes, I think so. It's in... Yes, in the second chapter, beginning of second chapter, it says the demigods, they have to follow your karma. So if you worship the demigods, they will just give you what you deserve. But so just like a shadow, the demigods follow your karma. But the devotees are actually merciful. They give you much more than you deserve. They give you what you need. They give you Krishna. So Krishna was like that too. He gave us much more than what we deserve. So we'll go to the last paragraph of this huge purport. Srila Jiva Goswami has quoted a verse from the end of the 11th canto that further clarifies the abode of the Lord is as eternal as the Lord himself. The ocean immediately swallowed Dwaraka, O Maharaj, taking away the Lord's personal abode, which the Lord had abandoned. Supreme Lord Madhusudana is always present in Dwaraka, which merely by being remembered takes away everything unfavorable. It is the most auspicious of all auspicious places. So that's from the 31st chapter. We're getting a taste. Just as the sun appears to be swallowed by the night, Krishna or his abode or his dynasty seems to disappear. But actually the Lord and all his paraphernalia, including his abode and dynasty, are eternal, in the same way as the sun is always in the sky. So we heard that already, that the sun is rising and setting, so the pastime is finished. Here it goes into another universe, and his Nitya Lila goes on. So there is another verse in the 15th chapter, first canto, verse 35. It says that Krishna is just like a magician, and he changes one body to accept. He doesn't change, but it looks like. It's magic for us. He knows how he does it, but for us it's like magic. We don't understand how he becomes a fish, how he becomes the Shinga. But all his forms are eternal. So now we go back to Bhagavatam, verse 8. Maharaj Parikshit is inquiring, how could the Brahmanas curse the Vrishnis, who are always respectful to the Brahmanas, charitable and inclined to serve, senior and exalted personalities, and whose minds are always fully absorbed in thought of Lord Krishna? Purport, paragraph 1. Brahmanas generally become angry at persons who disrespect the Brahminical class, who are uncharitable, who decline to serve senior respectable personalities. The Vrishnis, however, were not like that, thus they are described here by King Parikshit as Brahmanyanam, or sincere followers of Brahminical culture. Further, even if the Brahmanas became angry, why would they curse members of Krishna's own family? Since the Brahmanas were well-learned, they must have known it is offensive to oppose personal associates of the Supreme Lord. The other dynasty is specifically described here as Vrishninam and Krishna Chetasam. In other words, they were Lord Krishna's own men. They were always absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Therefore, even if somehow or other the Brahmins had cursed them, how could that curse have had any effect? Many, many questions here, which have been asked by King Parikshit, which may arise in the minds of people. King Parikshit continued inquiring, what was the motive for this curse? What did it consist of, O purest of the twice born? And how could such a disagreement have arisen among the Yadus, who all shared the same goal of life? Please tell me, all these things. Verse 10, Shukadeva Goswami said, "The Lord, who bore his body as the amalgamation of everything beautiful, dutifully executed the most auspicious activities while on the earth, although he was in fact, without any endeavor, already satisfied in all desires. Residing in his abode and enjoying life, the Lord, whose glorification is in itself magnanimous, now wanted to annihilate his own dynasty, as there still remained some small part of his duty to be carried out." Mission not finished. Mission, part of his mission is to annihilate his own dynasty. So most of the burden of the earth is removed, but now there is a further burden. So the purport, paragraph 1, this verse answers Pariksit Maharaj's question, how the powerful members of the outer dynasty could be cursed by the Brahmins and thus destroy themselves in a fratricidal war. By the word Samhartum Aichata Kulam, it is clearly stated the Lord Krishna himself desired to withdraw his dynasty and therefore engage the Brahmanas as his agent. So, what is the answer to the question of Maharaj Pariksit? Why? How could they curse the outer dynasty? How could all these things happen? Krishna's will, Krishna's desire. It was his will. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur remarks here, Krishna had clearly demonstrated the unsurpassable beauty and strength of his personal form, pastimes, and pleasures to all the residents of the earth. Thus, his incarnation to kill the demons, save the devotees, reestablish religious principles had been completely successful. When Lord Krishna noticed his mission was now complete, everything having been done perfectly, he desired to return to his transcendental abode along with the Vrishnis, for the Lord personally arranged for the Yadu dynasty to be cursed by the Brahmanas. Now in the next paragraph, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Aptakama means Krishna is always self-satisfied, yet in order to execute his transcendental pastimes, he arranged to destroy his own dynasty for three specific purposes, namely, to reestablish in the heavenly planets those demigods who had taken birth among the Yadus to assist him. 2. To reestablish his plenary Vishnu expansions and their abodes, such as Vaikuntha, Shweta Deep, and Bhadarika Ashrama. Interesting. Who's in Vaikuntha? Who are these? Sankarshan? Narayan? Jayavijay? Oh, yeah, that's true. Now, this is talking about plenary Vishnu expansions. Yeah, that's true. I mean, Krishna's sons. Pradyumna, Aniruddha, these sons and grandson, they are plenary expansions. And who is in Bhadarika Ashrama? Arjuna. Yes. And to remove himself from the vision of the material world along with his eternal associates. So everybody had to go back now. I mean, he called them, beginning of 10th canto. He called the other dynasty. He called the demigods. He called everyone to come and help out with the removing the burden of the earth. And now he has to send them back. So how to send them back? We will hear. Verse 11 and 12. The sages, Vishvamitra, Asita, Kanva, Durvasa, Bhrigu, Angira, Kashyapa, Vamadeva, Atri, and Vishishta, along with Narada and others, once perform fruitive rituals that award abundant pious results, bring great happiness, and take away the sins of Kali Yuga for the whole world by merely being recounted. The sages duly executed these rituals in the home of the chief of the Yadus, Vasudeva, father of Lord Krishna. After Lord Krishna, who was staying in Vasudeva's house as time personified, respectfully sent the sages off at the conclusion of the ceremonies, they went to the holy place called Pindaraka. So here's a hint that this is going to be the end of his dynasty. The sages are there, they did the sacrifice, now they went to Pindaraka. And Krishna is called Kalatmana, form of time. That means the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking on his pastimes, and the time is about to end. Just like our clock is ticking. We don't know when the time is going to end, but our clock is also ticking. But here, Krishna's pastimes, it's about to end. The last paragraph of the purport, it says, significantly, Lord Krishna is mentioned here as Kal Atmana, form of time, or super soul. Of course, we heard in the third canto that the Yadus saw Krishna as super soul. That was how they, that's how they understood. They saw him as the Paramatma in everyone's heart. So now, but Paramatma has two features. He has an internal feature and he has an external feature. We hear that in the prayers of Queen Kunti. Manye tvam kalam ishanam anadi nitanam vibhum. That you are here as kala, or time. So internally we have the super soul, the witness. He gives us everything. He watches and he sanctions. And externally we have the form of time. That is super soul in the form of time. So now Krishna is actually taking on the external feature of the super soul for the other dynasty. So here in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Supreme Personality of Godhead reveals himself to Arjuna as time personified, appearing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra to destroy all the kings and armies who constitute a burden to the earth. Similarly, Kalatmana Nivasata Yadudeva Gehe. Krishna was staying in the home of his father Vasudev as time personified, thus indicating that the time was approaching for the destruction of his own dynasty according to his desire. Okay, now we're going to review why did Krishna destroy his dynasty. Let's hear all the reasons why. Don't look at your computers, your papers, or your notes. What's that?
Go to his associates.
To?
Spiritual world.
He wanted to send his associates to the spiritual world, yes? And they will trample the earth in separation. Yes?
Two of the reasons he presented that they had become externally contemptuous and proud in personal association.
Okay, some of them have become proud, indifferent, and contemptuous in his own association.
There's another reason that it's actually, there's a practical application. It's actually Krishna was teaching us at the end of his pastime that he wanted to teach us detachment.
Detachment. There's no permanent position in this material world. Okay, you had one? Already? No? Yes?
Send the demigods back.
Send the demigods back? Yeah?
There was another one about Mayavad. The people would think that the Yadus and Krishna all had the same power because they exhibited the same power. They all had the same power, so they could think that it was all one.
It's all one, yeah.
Krishna showed that no.
He destroyed them. Any other reasons? Yes.
Like Dr. Prabhupada said that sun disappears the same way Krishna disappeared. And
okay. Nitya Leela. Yes.
Krishna's job was done.
His job was done.
Yeah.
Right.
All the demoniac kings
were. So his mission was finished? Okay. Yes?
He disappeared. So today appeared again as a Srimad Bhagavatam.
Okay, well, he came back as Srimad Bhagavatam. he left something for us here. Yes, left his Bhagavatam. Very good. Okay, let's see what else I have here. Yeah, it's all covered here. And no one can claim to be a descendant of Krishna. No Krishna Vansha, no Yadu Vansha. No Yadu Vansha is left. Though some people sometimes say yes. I've heard devotees say, yes, we are actually the Yadu Vansha.
There is some caste or something in India.
There is. Yeah, okay.
Yadavas.
Oh, okay, so we do have. Varshya, so we still have it, even though Krishna made sure. Okay, there we go. Yeah, so I mean, it's a very popular idea. So it's a good thing he didn't leave his family, even. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There we go. So it's a very nice idea, but sorry, Krishna took away his dynasty. Nice. I mean, it's nice to think you're part of Krishna's family. And actually, everybody's a part of Krishna's family. But it's on the spiritual side. It's not by birth. It's not by birth. This is the problem. The people want to be everything by birth. Yes, I am born in Krishna's family. I am born in Nityananda's family. I am born in Lord Chaitanya's family. No, we are all in Lord Chaitanya's family and all in Krishna's family. But we have to take initiation from the spiritual master, get the connection to the parampara, and then we get the connection to the family of Krishna. And we are all... Actually, I have a nice story about one of my god sisters who became a devotee. She came to the temple in Washington, D.C., I believe. And she was searching, you know, for different paths. And she came to the door, knocked on the door, and the door opened. One beautiful young girl was there, and she said, "Welcome. Welcome to your home. This is your home." She took her in, and she opened up the Bhagavad Gita and showed her a picture of Prabhupada. "And this is your father." And she showed her a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta and said, "This is your grandfather." And then she showed all the pictures. "This is your great-grandfather." And she showed the devotees, "And these are your brothers and sisters. So you can stay here the rest of your life. All you have to do is bring your toothbrush, and you can stay the rest of your life." So she went home and thought about it. And she next morning she took her toothbrush, and she went to the temple president and said, "I want to join. I brought my toothbrush." Which is all she had, actually, in the world. And yeah, so actually we're all a part of Krishna's family. Achyuta Gotra. We are part of Krishna's family. But it's not that an institution that is, you're born in Krishna's family. It's not like that. It's not by birth. It is open for everyone. Nectar of Devotion says clearly, it's for everyone. So let's see what happened here next. In the purport, we're in verse 13 to 15. "To that holy place, the young boys of the Yadu dynasty had brought Samba, son of Jambavati, dressed in woman's garb. Playfully approaching the great sages gathered there, the boys grabbed hold of the sages' feet and impudently asked them with feigned humility, 'O learned brahmanas, this black-eyed pregnant woman has something to ask you. She is too embarrassed to inquire for herself. She is just about to give birth and is very desirous of having a son. Since all of you are great sages with infallible vision, please tell us whether her child would be a boy or a girl.'" So purport, paragraph 1, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has made the following comment. "The impudent behavior of the young Yadus toward the sages headed by Narada, who were all brahmanas and devotees of the Lord, was a display of deviation from the path of Lord Krishna. Similarly, although the Prakriti Sahajiyas think of themselves as intimate associates of Krishna, the supremely merciful Lord's determination is perfectly correct in working to finish such false devotees. Such impostors actually never accept real service to Krishna. The Yadu Kumara's deception is termed seemingly humble, meaning that in fact they were anything but humble. Therefore, the ridiculing of Vaishnavas by the Lord's family resulted in a great offense against the devotees of the Lord." Now we'll go to the last two paragraphs of the purport. "The mockery of the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas by the young boys of the Yadu dynasty who dressed Samba in woman's garb result in destruction of the Yadu dynasty, conclusively demonstrate the uselessness of the Sahajiya Sampradayas." This is what will happen to them. Sri Jiva Goswami has confirmed that the lack of humility shown by the sons of the Yadu dynasty was an arrangement by the Lord himself. In other words, members of the Yadu dynasty are ultimately associates of Lord Krishna, and to facilitate the instructive pastimes of the Lord, they acted in apparently unethical ways. 16. "Thus ridiculed by deceit, the sages became angry, O king, and told the boys, 'Fools! She will bear you an iron club that will destroy your entire dynasty.'" So the first sentence of the purport. Just before, that's not what, it's of the, not the purport, but the second paragraph. Just before his disappearance, Krishna desired the sages become angry at the young members of the Yadu dynasty in order to teach. So here's what you learn. Vaishnavas cannot be thought of as foolish, ignorant, or mundane, and to reduce the false pride of his own family members. So we should not ever think a Vaishnava is foolish or ignorant or mundane. Don't criticize devotees. Verse 17, upon hearing the curse of the sages, the terrified boys quickly uncovered the belly of Sambha, and indeed they observed therein was an iron club. The young men of the other dynasty said, "Oh, what have we done? We are so unfortunate. What will our family members say to us?" Speaking thus and being very disturbed, they returned to their homes, taking the club with them. The other boys, luster of their faces completely faded, brought the club into the royal assembly, and in the presence of all the Yadavas, they told King Ugrasena what had happened. Purport, Vishnu Chakravarti points out, the word Ragye refers to King Ugrasena and not to Sri Krishna. Because of their shame and fear, the boys did not approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. So Krishna was not told about this club. Of course, he knew all about it, because he's time. But actually, they didn't tell Krishna. O King Parikshit, when the inhabitants of Dwarka heard of the infallible curse of the Brahmanas and saw the club, they were astonished and distraught with fear. After having the club ground to bits, King Ahuka Ugrasena of the Yadus personally threw the pieces along with the remaining lump of iron into the water of the ocean. Purport, King Ugrasena thought, Sambha and the others should not feel any shame or fear. Thus, without even consulting Sri Krishna, he ordered the club ground to bits and thrown into the water, along with a small iron lump that remained, which he considered insignificant. A certain fish swallowed the iron lump, and the bits of iron carried back to the shore by the waves implanted themselves there and grew into tall, sharp canes. The fish was caught in the ocean along with other fish in a fisherman's net. The iron lump in the fish's stomach was taken by the hunter Jara, who fixed it as an arrowhead at the end of his shaft. Knowing fully the significance of all these events, the Supreme Lord, though capable of reversing the Brahmana's curse, did not wish to do so. Rather, in his form of time, he gladly sanctioned the events. Purport. Ordinary persons may be surprised or bewildered. The Lord gladly sanctioned the cursing and destruction of his own dynasty. The word anvamodita used here indicates taking pleasure in something or giving sanction or approval. He was happy that this happened. It is also mentioned Kala Rupi. Krishna gladly gave his sanction to the Brahmana's curse in the form of time. So Krishna has taken this form now. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada has commented, the Supreme Lord Krishna Chandra decided to maintain the curse intact in order to protect the actual principles of religion and destroy the unbecoming offense of the deceitful members of the Karshana dynasty. We'll go to the end of paragraph 1. The principle of serving the pure devotee of Krishna is so essential for spiritual advancement that the Lord exhibited the inconceivable pastime of causing the destruction of his entire dynasty just to impress this point upon the conditioned souls of Kali Yuga. What is the point he wanted to impress?
To serve the pure devotees of the Lord.
Serve the pure devotees. Last paragraph, second paragraph. Srimad Bhagavatam hints at the great misfortunes that would come after the disappearance of the great Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such misfortunes also occurred after the disappearance of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is accepted by Gaudiya Vaishnavas as Krishna himself. Through various instructions, the Bhagavatam provides for eliminating the cheating pseudo-religion that comes forth in human society after the departure of the Lord. So after Lord Chaitanya left, I think 13 apasampradayas sprang up. Prabhupada lists them in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And one of them was described here in the purport, Prakriti Sahajya. That's not apasampradaya, that's Prakriti Sahajya. Okay, so this is the end of this chapter. Are there any questions or comments on this first chapter? Yes. Well, that was part of the curse. The curse was it was a real live lump of iron. The iron lump was not dead. It grew, just like a baby grows. All the little pieces grew into baby sugar cane and then big ones, big like Cain. Ari Purush?
Actually, if you go to Prabhasa Kshetra, it's very interesting. If you go to the shore, all shore is filled with like stone columns or.
Mm-hmm.
It looks very unusual. I didn't see it in other places. Many like stone.
If you go to Prabhasa, stone, like there's these stone columns at the shore. Okay. So watch out. Don't get angry with anybody. You may. We could never probably pick up those. Yeah, they're too heavy for any human, right? But the Yadus were superhuman. So imagine, they must have been really huge pieces of. And the remaining iron lump was taken by the hunter Jara to shoot, to make the arrow to shoot Lord Krishna. Yes? Moshala Lila means the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. Moshala. Moshala, what is the exact meaning of Moshala?
Departure.
Depart, oh yeah, depart. Means what?
Club-like weapon.
Club-like weapon. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, the Moshala. Balaram has the Moshala also, yeah. That's interesting. Just to think of that, the name of that word, it's the name of the clubs that they killed each other with. So it's the club lila, Moshala lila, yes?
You brought up the mother teaches the daughter in law by teaching the daughter in front of Venus.
Right, Bhishma, yeah.
Bhishma Dev's teachings in the first country. So Krishna teaches the conditioned souls by teaching his pure devotees.
By using his pure devotees, by teaching them, that's one way,
yeah.
And also by using them as an example. Well, here it says that some were demigods. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, some were demigods, some were eternal associates. So the demigod portions went to Prabhas. The original associates remained in Dwaraka, unseen. The Pradyumna, the real Pradyumna, Aniruddha, the plenary portions, they remained in Dwaraka, unseen. But this was the external lila, was to send them all back. Even Pradyumna and Aniruddha went back to their Shvetadweep and Vaikuntha and all these places. They also went back. But they didn't, actually, the original one, eternal associates did not participate in the, we'll find this out later in 30 and 31. Actually, it's interesting. Now we're hearing this part, and then it's going to continue in chapter 30 and 31, this particular lila. It's starting now, and now we have to wait until end of January, maybe, or February, to hear what happens next. We won't find out until after Uddhava Gita. It's like the Battle of Kurukshetra. You know, before the battle, you hear the Gita. And then after the Gita, then the battle happens. So it's like that here too, that we're having, you know, we hear, okay, there's going to be a battle. We're hearing about it. He's going to remove his dynasty. But in the meantime, we're going to hear Bhagavad Dharma from the nine Gangas, and then we're going to hear Uddhava Gita. And then the battle will resume in chapter 30, 31, departure of, we'll hear what happened to all those canes that grew, and we'll hear what happened to the iron lump that Jara Hunter, the hunter Jara got, and that will all happen in 30 and 31. So in the meantime, we're going to have a lot of philosophy, a lot of deep philosophy, much deeper than Bhagavad Gita. So many more examples on how you're not this body, as Burijan Prabhu says, an out-of-body experience for 11th canto. Yes? Yeah, so the question is, are his plenary expansions absent when Krishna comes? And according to a lot of stories, the answer is yes. That they are not seen. What story? There's a story about somebody.
Narada went.
Narada went looking. He went to Vaikuntha. Shvetadweep, and nobody was, the Lord wasn't there. And even this one who wanted to join, Lord Shiva and that sage, they also went looking. They went everywhere, you know, where's, you know, because they wanted to get darshan of Krishna. You know. Went to Vaikuntha, went to, you know, Goloka even. And so finally they found out, oh, Krishna is having his Ras Lila down in Braj, if you want to see him. So Lord Shiva and this sage, I forgot his name, they both came down and they had to, of course they weren't allowed, and they both had to assume the form of gopis to enter the Ras Lila. But they were looking everywhere, and there's one more story which I can't remember, something about a crown. Someone wanted to return the crown of Vishnu, and he went there and Vishnu wasn't there to give the crown back to. Anyway, so yes, so we hear from the scriptures that the Lord, when Krishna comes, everybody comes in his body. Vishnu comes, Narayan comes. Of course, Mahavishnu was there when Krishna went there to visit. Somehow he was there, but he couldn't actually. Somehow he wanted to see Krishna face to face also, but they come within the body of Krishna. All the colors are there in Krishna's form, and all the plenary expansions are there in Lord Krishna. And we see that also in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, that when Lord Chaitanya came, then sometimes he showed his Varaha Rupa, sometimes he showed his Nrsingha Rupa, his Balaram, he showed his form as Balaram, he showed different forms to people, to devotees. Yeah, so we hear, there are many stories. That. Which one is that about Narada Muni? Where is that from? Chaitanya Mangal. Okay, Chaitanya Mangal. Yeah, so there are stories like that where he's not there. But even there's a verse from the Puranas that says, I am not in Vaikuntha, I am not in the heart of the yogis, I am wherever devotees are chanting my glories. So that's another point. Sometimes the Lord disappeared. Yeah, it's long time here, but it's a few seconds. Like here, it's, you know, one breath is the whole creation. So, you know, just maybe a very short fraction of his breath. The Vaikuntha breath is probably even longer than the Mahavishnu's breath. He's non-different. So Mahavishnu's breath and Narayan's breath are probably the same. So if you want to measure it, okay, there you go. The breath of the Lord. So he may come down for a very short time.
Moksha means a combat with fists.
Fists? But doesn't Lord Balaram have also moshala, like a, you know, something interesting? Combat with fists. I guess at the end they ran out of
what
canes. Combat with fists.
Combat?
Fight,
combat.
Fight. Combat. Fighting with fists.
Boxing match.
Moshala Lila. The different meanings of moshala. Yes. Departure is a meaning. Okay, any other questions or
what? Mausala.
Oh, mausala. Okay. Now we got confused. Mausala. Okay, club is different. Mausala. And this is?
Moshala.
Okay, so we have different, it's a very similar word.
Yes,
here.
Bengalis would always say moshala.
Yeah, yeah, moshala. Yeah, okay, good thing we have some Sanskrit scholars in our class. Yes.
So about 2 years ago, I followed the seminar of Mahaniti Maharaj.
Mahaniti Swami.
In Mayapur, and was a seminar on a certain chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Chaitanya Bhagavat. Yeah, and he was making a point about this descendants of Nityananda.
Nityanvansha.
Some of these Nityananda followers, they sometimes visit Radhakund. And mm-hmm. He says we may offend them.
Yeah, we don't want to offend. Right.
Some are genuine.
Yeah. So I was just reading, like, I was just saying the principle of the thing. Yeah. That we should not offend also Nityanvansha people. And actually, I just met, when we were on the retreat, I met one disciple of a foreign disciple of a Nityananda Vamsa, so I was very surprised, because I thought, well, you know, I thought they don't accept that you can be something besides Nityananda Vamsa. So I was quite, and a very nice devotee. Yes, she was. Very nice. And working with Ann ISKCON. And she doesn't want to tell anyone who her guru is, because she thought she might think, well, I'm Appa Sampradaya or something. But anyway, yeah. So now in Lord Chaitanya's movement, we have to see, we have to not judge externally by external things. We shouldn't fall into the same fault as the people who we're talking about. We should not fall into the same critical mood. So we will have a half-hour break until 12:30, and then we will have another class on the second chapter, beginning of the second chapter, before the Navayogendras speak. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.